Tired of sugar-coated news and corporate spin? Check out The Nicole Sandler Show, speaking truth to power with the irreverence it deserves. Smart, fearless, and just the right amount of snark, Nicole breaks down the headlines, exposes the hypocrisy, and talks with the people working for real change. Weekdays at 3 Eastern, noon Pacific on Progressive Voices, NicoleSandler.com, Substack, YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts. Don't just get the news, get the truth.
MSW Media.
Spy Talk, a podcast at the intersection of intelligence, foreign policy, national security, and military operations.
Hi there, I'm Jeff Stein. This is Spy Talk. Big stuff going on in the intelligence world this week as President Trump upends some 80 years of American unity with Western European democracies and appears to side with Russian dictator Vladimir Putin on Ukraine and many other matters. Seemed to me there were few better insiders to address this radical turn in events than Sue Miller, a former head of counterintelligence for the CIA, among other high positions she held during her 39-year career at the spy agency. In that role, she oversaw the CIA's assessment of Russian interference in the 2016 elections, which concluded, as she put it to me, that Moscow undoubtedly wanted Trump to win, even though she readily volunteered. There's no way to measure how many votes Russia's operatives and intelligence agencies swung his way. Today, though, she said that Trump's swing to Moscow should be an ongoing and counterintelligence concern. But there's lots more we covered during our conversation. China's devastating roll-up of CIA assets there a few years ago, for one thing. In 2020, Miller was tasked with setting up the CIA's new China Mission Center. She's also been a station chief or deputy station chief in hot spots ranging from Europe to Southeast Asia to the Middle East. But she's also got an amusing story to tell about matching wits with the KGB in the snows of Moscow in the depths of the Cold War. Sue Miller, welcome to Spy Talk. I can't think of a better spy to have on Spy Talk than a former deputy director of the CIA for counterintelligence. That makes you kind of an American version of George Smiley, Le Carre's famous spy hunter. How do you feel about that?
I feel great, and I'm going to tell my twins, who are 26, who don't think I'm cool, that somebody thinks I'm cool. So, cool.
Definitely cool, to be correct. Wow. Is the life of a spy hunter, as it's depicted by Le Carre, shadows within shadows within shadows, or the famous Hall of Mirrors, Wilderness of Mirrors?
It's a little bit of both, I'll be honest. It's not as kinetic as it's depicted in movies and books where we all carry guns around and we shoot people in our headquarters or, you know, things like that. But a lot of what Le Carre says and does with regard to how we go and recruit an asset and run them and hope that we can run them securely so they never get caught, pay them tons of money. I've had several assets I've run where I've had to give them $10 million or $1 million, which is very heavy. I'll tell you that when you're carrying it through the streets. So Yes, so parts of it are true, but a lot of it, the Hollywood stuff, is not true.
But part of it is true in terms of dodging KGB goons in Moscow.
100%. I was there still during the Soviet days and had a ball dodging them. Sometimes the way we would do operations is you'd kind of leave the embassy, and if you were going to go do something, if they were really close to you, you would just abort and you would just not do what you were going to do because you couldn't do it safely or securely. So generally, if you had that, you would just kind of play along. I had the joy once of my boss saying, "I really need you to do this thing, and therefore I want you to lose them." And me, a California driver, thumbs up. And so I said, okay. And so I did. And it was easy to do. They had those crappy Lada cars and Trevantes and things like that. And I had an American car. and I totally lost them. And it was great. I went and did my thing. I came back to my house, which was down near Gorky Park, and parked my car. It snowed all the time there. It was snowing even as I was doing this, this driving thing for my operation. And woke up the next morning, get out to the car. I get in the car and I'm starting to drive to the embassy. And I realize my car is pulling. And I knew it wasn't the snow. And so I got out and I found a hole in the front sidewall of the front right tire and in the back sidewall of the back left tire and 3 KGB surveillance in three different cars behind me laughing their heads off.
They were being subtle.
No, they knew they had done it and they knew I knew they did it. And I was like, you know, I know how to change tires. My dad taught me. I was the only girl in, you know, family of boys. And he wanted to make sure I didn't have to get in somebody's car. You know, I could change my tire. I'm not changing it. It was like minus 20 out, minus 30 out even.
Deep snow.
And so I just sat there. And finally they came up and said, what's wrong? And I said to them in Russian, oh, I'm so sorry. I'm a blonde from California and I don't know how to change a tire. And somehow I got 2 flat tires. I don't know how, you know, et cetera. And they're sitting in cars that have no heat. These are the old cars. And so they actually finally, after about 10 minutes of arguing with each other, came up and said, we'll change your tires. So that was my best operation, I'll be honest.
Got the KGB to change your tires.
Yeah, yeah.
You also headed the CIA's part in the investigation into Russian interference in the 2016 elections.
I did.
There was some debate at that time whether the Russians' intent, Vladimir Putin's attempt, was just to throw chaos into American politics or to get Trump elected. How did you come down on that?
We looked at all of the evidence, both classified and unclassified, that was out there. And our bottom line was 100% the Russians tried to influence the elections towards Trump. 100% we added on to that. We cannot tell you if it worked unless we polled every American voter. And mm-hmm. given how close that election was, that first election was, you know, it's clear it didn't work in a way that they wanted to. And so that's exactly what our report said.
What do you mean it didn't work the way they wanted it to?
Well, it didn't work as it was a very close election. That's why they probably had hoped that it would be much clearer than that. But it did work because at mm-hmm. the end of the day, he had the majority and Congress certified it and everything else. So, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Of course, Trump has repeatedly said since then that is all Russia hoax and so on. But Vladimir Putin himself said in that famous Helsinki press conference in 2018, yes, I wanted him to win. And
right.
they have incredibly close relations right now, mm-hmm. oddly and shockingly enough. So a former colleague of yours supplied me with a question. I asked him, I said, what would you like me to ask you? And he said, I think I'm struck by the historical context. Previous U.S. presidents from Reagan to FDR have struggled with trying to mend or cultivate constructive relations with Russia against the will of allies or establishment political forces. What's different this time?
In the sense with Trump, as opposed to any of the other ones?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so what to me is different is they actually had a plan to try to throw the elections, not just write an editorial here or there. And we've certainly had disinformation from Russians, like nothing to see here in Prague, even though we're about to invade it, you know, sort of things. But this was different because we had a very good information that they really wanted Trump to be president. They felt he was going to be the better one to work with. That because of that, they did the best they could to try to influence our elections using money, using cutouts, using various platforms and things like that, but posing as something else.
The last time we talked, we were discussing, which was a week or so ago, we were discussing the allegations by a former KGB official that Trump was a recruited agent, that he was codenamed run by Russian intelligence. And you expressed a lot of skepticism about that report. But at the bottom line, he said it doesn't really matter because it's all in the open now. It's so obvious that Trump has aligned himself with Putin's own foreign policy directives, right?
Right. It is irrelevant. All I can say is we looked. We could find no evidence then. Has there been evidence that has been found since then? Not to my knowledge. I just retired a few months ago from the agency. So up until then, I hadn't heard anything about that. But could he have been earlier on? I think he actually, you know, went to Russia once as a businessman or something like that. But at that time, the Russians would not have thought, hey, he's going to be a president someday. He was just a really big, rich businessman that was trying to do business in Russia. So I just don't know the answer to that. I think maybe we will someday. Is that actually true or is it actually false and nothing in between? But all I can say is that nothing I saw showed that he was any kind of a spy from the beginning or recruited from the beginning.
Mm-hmm. He likes Putin because he likes the dictatorship. He likes the power that Putin and others like him, Xi Jinping, and so on. The kind of power, unlimited power they have.
That's exactly my view.
And he's a wannabe dictator.
Right.
Let me ask you this. Given what's going on, maybe this is more for the plot of a spy thriller. It makes you wonder if he's the Manchurian candidate here. Would CIA, I know you're out of the loop to a certain extent now. I mean, you're not looking at current intelligence reports, I guess, unless they're coming to see you about specific matter, ask for your expertise.
The latter is true, but yeah.
Is he still a counterintelligence concern?
I think a counterintelligence concern in the sense that he might be a spy. I think that if information came along, we would embrace it. And we would look at it, we'd turn it over to the Bureau, we would, you know, do everything that we needed to do. We didn't have that information. We had very good information that they were influencing the elections and trying to. But we did not have anything that said at that time that he was an asset of Russia. But you know what, to me, I don't think it matters. It's sort of a point. Is he an asset or is he a willing co-conspirator? The outcome is the same. He's bent towards their views for whatever reason. And for that reason is, which is appalling to me, threatening to take away aid to Ukraine. And he just wants to stop the war without any really good, you know, things in place. And it that bothers me a lot because Ukraine is a democracy. Russia is not. We should be on the Ukraine side.
I have to remind myself sometimes, not just the listeners today. Mm-hmm. You're a former head of counterintelligence for CIA.
Right.
Helping protect the nation against intrusions by foreign opposition spies and assets.
Right.
And here you are sitting here conjuring up a portrait of the president of the United States as an asset, as an agent to one degree or another of Russia. To see, again, just to wrap this up.
Yeah.
Does CIA counterintelligence, if you picked up, or I should say more widely, anyone in U.S. intelligence and National Security Agency and so on, so forth, who are constantly monitoring, trying to penetrate Russian communications, if you picked up word of the Russians talking about their manipulation of Trump, what would you do with it?
We would immediately, I'd go to, well, as counterintelligence.
Would you go to Trump?
No, I'd go to the FBI first, because generally they would handle it, that sort of thing. But at the same time, I would want to verify it, see if I had other pieces of information that were there, and I would turn it over to law enforcement, because if that's the case, then he's breaking the law, you know.
Would that be made public? Would the FBI make that public?
They generally are really good about doing an investigation to the bitter end and then making it public at the very end. Hmm. I mean, there's certain leaks that come from the FBI every now and then, of course, like there are from CIA. But generally, they need to keep the legal side, you know, very, very carefully done, so that if there is a prosecution, there's no pushback that sticks.
There's no question, though, even with the Trump's installed people at CIA and FBI, there's no question that an investigation would go forward. Or do you worry that under the current leadership, mm-hmm. that investigation, that information would never surface?
That is a excellent question. Right now, I don't know enough about the new director of CIA to know if that director will actually just let this be, or if he's going to try to find things that probably aren't there that he can, you know, feed to Trump. I don't know him at all. He could do that, and I don't know what their relationship is, since he was made the director. I'm assuming it's very close.
Hmm.
So it'll be interesting to see what comes out of the agency over the next 6 months to a year.
I'll say. We have to step away for a minute. Back in a second. Okay, we're back. What are you hearing about and what I call the Langley Tom-Tom circuit? What are you hearing about firings at CIA, either for DEI linkage or probationary employees and so on? What's the latest you heard?
So the latest I heard is DEIA absolutely are in the process of being fired. Anybody that's working on that. And that's not just CIA, that's across the federal government. With regard to firings, I've heard there's a pause. And I get this information not only from my friends who are still working there. And actually, I'm still a cleared contractor that works in training, not in the big building now, but in one of the other buildings we have. But still, so I hear that there is people were asked to give a list, not necessarily of names, but well, originally it was names. This was from the DOGE. It was supposed to be over UNCLASS network and Pentagon, CIA, NSA, name another one, NGA, all pushed back and said, really, do we want to have the Russians, because they'll have that, or the Chinese to have all that information? And they correctly backed off of that.
Yeah.
So that is still going to be going over, as I understand it. And we'll see what happens. My personal opinion is that it is not smart to fire these new hires. First of all, the U.S. taxpayers, you know, probably have spent millions of dollars when you look at all of the new hires that have come over the last couple of years.
It's very expensive to train.
Very expensive just to get them on board. What I would do if I was Trump and I wanted to save money, and we've done this before, start offering early retirements. Start getting rid of some of the people at the top. Don't shoot yourself in the foot by getting rid of the smartest people who know AI, who know how to get into things that I don't know how to do now, you know, that come up with the best ideas. When I was in charge of the China Mission Center, came from the youngest officers, and they worked. You know, I mean, it was amazing. And so that's what I would do is I don't mind, tamping down a little bit on government. That's fine. That's up to him. But I think the better way to do it is to start with the early retirements and things like that. That's
and all. Many, many critics of CIA for years have said there's a lot of bureaucratic cutting that could be done at CIA. There's a lot of people who have limited field experience. They go back and get a nice desk job at CIA, and they stay there. And they want to stay there because their kids are at school nearby. You know, they can raise their families nicely in Fairfax County and so on. And they're directing operations, and they're really out of it over the years. They, like you say, they're not hip to the younger people coming in who have fresh ideas and aggressive there. They're really bureaucrats or espiocrats, I think it's John le Carré called them. And they're sort of getting in the way of operations. So long before Trump came along, there were those of us who followed CIA closely and said, boy, and talked to people like you who said, boy, they really need to take a rake to the middle management out at CIA and get rid of a lot of dead enders there. So that's the place that could use cutting. And meanwhile, getting rid of people who have been through the farm, the training course in Virginia, that's very expensive stuff. And they're just getting started. It takes, as someone, one operations veteran said, it takes 10 years to really hone a spy.
I would agree.
Give them enough experience to be in the field, make their mistakes and so on, and be able to carry out the mission. And the mission is to know what our enemies are doing.
Yes.
So to prevent an attack or surprise maneuver to undermine the United States, right?
Yeah.
Speaking of which, you ran the China Mission Center.
Yes.
Big, big job. We've had trouble with China operations, according to several reports over the years. Former CIA people going bad, selling secrets to the Chinese, rolling up dozens of it's been reported, I think, dozens of CIA assets in China. Can you give us an idea where you were, where CIA was when you left?
So I can't go into a whole lot of details on this. But yes, they did roll up a bunch. And we figured out how and why. And we acknowledged that mistakes were made. And we underestimated the enemy. And we have therefore changed.
How did you underestimate the Chinese?
How good they were, how, you know, that kind of thing. How, you know, because for many years, the one threat we were mostly afraid of was the Russians and the KGB. Back in those days, in my early years, PRC really didn't have the same kind of government and security services. It's not that they didn't spy. Of course they did. We have, you know, people from my own organization spying for the Chinese over the years. But we just underestimated how much they could monitor their own people. You know, and that's one part. But the other part really is that they have really shut down on things. They don't want any of their people next to any U.S. diplomat or agency officer or British diplomat or anything like that. You know, you used to go to cocktail parties, right? You know, that's the typical thing at an embassy. You go to a cocktail party, you meet a bunch of people. They're not showing up at any of those. And so that is causing some issues as well.
Is surveillance as thick in China as it was in Russia, and so obvious, or does Chinese facial recognition technology and so on make it less obtrusive but better surveillance? You know what I'm getting at here? I mean, would you have an incident like with the Lada, where the KGB guys freezing in their cars outside, following you around? Was it that obvious in China?
Well, here's the deal. They meant to be that obvious that day. They were not that obvious every time I went out.
Sure, sure, sure.
And so you would have to do, you know, certain maneuvers and things like that to make sure that you didn't have it. So as technology changes, I would say like every 5 years, we take another look, maybe 8 years, take another look at what is going on. And we have to keep changing what we are doing, because as more techs are out there, more tech coverage is out there all over the world, even in London. Why do they have they have camera, stoplight,
CCTV.
Yeah, CCTV and all that, because we're worried about crime, we're worried about terrorism, we're worried about this and that. And anybody can go and dig into those CCTVs and, you know, things like that. Mm-hmm. And that's just something, but beyond that, that's just something that we have to think about. And frankly, the PRC people, that are the MSS guys that are working abroad, have to think about as well.
Mm-hmm.
We're all weirdly in the same boat.
I have to pick up on what you said about CCTV in London being hacked by foreign intelligence organizations. So mm-hmm. you just assume that the Chinese have hacked into, or the Russians, or yourselves have hacked into CCTV in London?
In London? We wouldn't do that because they're our friends. But based, and it'd be a waste of money. The thing is that they have
they
the ability, the Chinese in particular, not so much the Russians. The Russians in Europe would probably have better coverage. The Chinese have better coverage all around the world. So the bottom line is that the Russians could absolutely hack into various types of platforms like the one we're on and some other things like that. They have the ability to do that. They don't,
including
have
in
that.
The United States.
Well, sure, because they have spies in the United States, in San Francisco, in New York. Well, I think San Francisco's been closed, but in New York and in Washington, D.C., and they probably have what we call NOCs, non-official cover officers, that are in here as businessmen or businesswomen or something like that. And so there's a capability that they can have to figure all of that out, you know.
FBI Director Wray, former FBI Director Chris Wray, quite famously talked about essentially this FBI being overwhelmed by Chinese intelligence here. You're anticipating my question. Did you feel overwhelmed by Chinese espionage here?
The thing is, espionage here and around the world. I'm going to just go with around the world. I'm not going to talk about specific things here. Clearly, there's been some people that have been spying for the PRC that have been arrested and put in jail. Same with Russia. My bigger concern about their spying is that prior to really focusing on supply chain operations, the California and other power grids around America were using Chinese companies to put our power grids in. You tell me they don't have an off switch just in case.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that for a fact.
Yeah,
but if we had access to their infrastructure like that, we'd put an off switch in, you know. We wouldn't do it because that's almost like that's an act of war, really. And we've got other ways to start a war.
But you want to be able to have the capability to turn their lights off in the event of a conflict.
That sure would be nice.
Doing the same to us.
Yeah.
And finally, this has been great. Thanks so much for coming on the show. It's fascinating. President Trump has launched new initiatives against the cartels in Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
Declaring the cartels foreign terrorist organizations, which gives the U.S. a lot more latitude for dealing mm-hmm. with. CIA have a role to play in going after these Mexican cartels?
So back in the day, we had a very robust counter-narcotics center, and that was some years ago. There's still a remnant of that exists, and I'm sure they're still helping. The issue is that it's really more of a law enforcement / DEA thing than ours. It's not to say that we won't help with some kind of intelligence or help them. So let's picture a DEA officer is in Mexico City and he wants to talk with one of our liaison contacts in their internal or external service that they don't have contact with. We'll absolutely help them with that. But this is not something that up and down, we have had a counter-narcotic center, and sometimes we've had some other things, but up and down, we have looked at it, but it's never really gotten the same teeth because other priorities come up. China, Russia, terrorism after 9/11, you know, Iraq, all of these other things. And so that's generally where the president and the Congress and Senate want us to spend our time.
Mm-hmm. Do you, when you left CIA, and you're still on contract, although I suppose your contract could be canceled because you've said some things critical of the Trump administration.
I don't think it's with a contracting firm. It's not like I'm directly contracted. I actually work for another firm, but I suppose it could.
Yeah. When you left, did you feel that counterintelligence, the protection of the CIA against penetration by foreign agents, was better off? Did you make improvements? I suppose you're not going to say, no, I didn't make any improvements.
So, no, I made improvements. And then I left to go be COS in Israel for a few years. And then I came back and I ran the China Mission Center. So between all of that, I feel like we are really looking hard. And I feel like we had gotten over all of the petty arguments we used to have with the FBI and other agencies, and we are working more tactically together. We've always shared our information for years, I should say, not always, but shared our information. But now to actually sit down in a room with an NSA, an FBI, maybe even if it has something to do with the military, a CENTCOM or DIA officer, or NGA, and talk about how can we all work together to get this one thing done is something that's very different and something that is, I believe, a very good tool for the American government and for our people.
What do you think the chances are that there's another Aldrich Ames, famous Russian mole at CIA? Well, there's another Aldrich Ames lying in the marshes out at Langley.
I will tell you, whether at Langley or anywhere else in the government, I know that they are trying to recruit spies. The PRC is, Russians are, anybody who hates us. Every now and then we found, over the years, we found an Iranian spy. And I swear we found a French one once too, but that was years and years ago. So anyway, long and short of it is we intentionally give new hires at the agency, and I know all of the other agencies do this too, a counterintelligence brief. Here's what it looks like. If something feels weird to you, if somebody approaches you and it feels weird, get information as to who that person is and what they're doing and why they're talking to you, and then report it. It's not that we're going to put that guy in jail. He's not even going to be, they're just going to look it up and say, oh, I know why he was doing that, because, he actually worked nearby and was probably blah, blah. But that's the kind of thing that FBI can do. And that's the kind of thing that we can do with our partners abroad as well.
If you see something, say something.
Yeah, exactly. It's that sort of thing. It's that simple.
Do you worry that these rash firings, these mass firings across the national security landscape, from the Pentagon to CIA and FBI, might produce another Aldrich Ames, someone embittered by these firings?
Yes.
100%. On a 1 to 10 worry scale, with 10 being hair on fire, how much do you worry about it?
So these new people, certainly they were vetted well enough that they got into the various agencies, right? And so we have some trust in them. But you really develop the trust where you're going to give them the most secret of secret information, as they move on in their careers. But they get super secret information from the very beginning. So we don't know them as well as I know the mid-career types. And could there already be somebody there who joined and is one of these types that if they screw me, I'm going to screw them? And that's why most spies become spies. It's not necessarily about the money, though the money is good if they want it. It's about, I'm just mad. Mm-hmm. I am so mad at the government. I am so this and I'm so that. And even though I'm not a Trump fan, I would argue that nobody should commit espionage because they don't like Trump. It's not the right thing to do. There's other venues you can go to kind of express your concerns. But man, you know, there's no reason to conduct espionage.
Well, I would think a further rationalization for somebody who's going bad, and I mean a rationalization saying, hey, the president of the United States is buddies with Vladimir Putin, so what's the big crime?
Oh, that's a good
point. Did I turn coat, you know?
Yeah, that will be interesting to see. There are certainly people that work for the agency in the Pentagon that voted for Trump, but that doesn't mean they've got that piece of whatever you want to call it inside of them that makes them want to betray their country.
If they're fired, though.
If they're fired.
And they got mortgages, they have kids' tuitions to pay,
yeah,
so on.
It does create a bigger vulnerability. Let me just put it that way.
Yeah.
I can't say for sure it'll create a spy, but if you fire people and they don't have the money and all these cleared contracting firms around, you know, these government contracting firms are super worried too, you're going to end up with more people that that might have a vulnerability. Whether they act on it or not is irrelevant. It's just that the more that's in the pot, the more likely one's going to jump out and do something wrong, right? You know, and so that's my thinking. And so I think that the mass firing is something that's devastating to these people. I don't know. It'll be really interesting because we've not really had this before. It will be interesting to see how this plays out, I'll be honest. But that's my initial take on it. And I'll be happy to write you if I can think of something else. But that's a really good question. And I'm gonna think about that.
If someone turns coat today, we may not find out for years down the road.
Like that's true.
Robert Hansen and Ames and so on, other famous spies. When you talk about trainees turning bad or recent hires, I think of Robert Howard.
Edward Lee Howard.
Edward Lee Howard,
mm-hmm.
Who was a new hire, and he turned bad, went to the Russians, spilled a lot of secrets.
Yeah. He had a lot of other traits that mm-hmm. we tend to weed out now before they even come on board. It's not to say we miss people. We do, because we still find spies in the U.S. government. But it is a lot harder for them to get on. But still, it is something that anything that creates a vulnerability, angst, or anger in somebody who holds a clearance and has access to classified information can indeed bring it, decide, you know, I'm going to show them in a way that is illegal and would put himself in jail, but would also get him a lot of money. And sometimes they forget about the jail part. So.
Illegal, immoral, and fattening, as he used to
yes,
say.
Yes, exactly.
Sue Miller, thanks so much for coming on the Spy Talk podcast.
All right. Nice chatting with you, and thanks for having me. I'll happy to talk anytime.
Thank you. And that's it for this week's Spy Talk. Thanks much for listening. You can find lots more interesting conversations like this one in our archives, available at our home at the MSW Network or on Apple or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you haven't already, mosey on over to our Spy Talk page on Substack, where my colleagues and I offer fresh reporting and analyses from the intersection of intelligence, foreign policy, and military operations. Just Google Spy Talk. You'll find your way there. This week's Spy Talk podcast was smoothly produced, as always, by Kanai and expertly edited by Molly Hawkey for MSW Media. That's it. See you around. I'm Jeff Stein.
For more original reporting and insights like this, subscribe to SpyTalk.co on Substack and follow us on Twitter at @talk_spy. If you enjoyed our podcast, subscribe and leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MSW Media.
Hey, it's Jody Hamilton.
And Sean Smith-Pierce.
Here's a taste of what you might have missed from the Politics Bar.
Jody, I was listening to you this morning, filling in for Steph. You and Chris were debating, and just for the record, Jody is right. Chris's argument is that there is some truth to what's being said about the left being in their own information silo. Right.
Basically, we started talking about how Gavin Newsom has invited people on his podcast, high up MAGA guys.
Yeah. Well-known right-wing propagandists. That's what they are. Yeah.
And my argument is he shouldn't be inviting them because nobody on that side is listening to Gavin Newsom.
Right. It doesn't help to bring propagandists into a sphere where truth matters because they're just going to lie their asses off anyway.
Right.
So here is a public service message for Chris Lavoie. Jody Hamilton is right. Catch all that and more weeknights at the Politics Bar. Available through your favorite progressive radio station, your favorite podcast player, or online anytime at thepoliticsbar.com.